All right, let's talk a little bit about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and how you can see the site. Ursula Bielski joins me right now, an author, an expert on the paranormal, the owner of ChicagoHauntings.com. Ursula, how are you? Thank you very much for being here.
I'm very cold, but excellent.
It's a little bit on the cold side. I'm not going to lie to you.
Just a little
bit. I apologize for that. As soon as the show's over,
I'm going to go outside.
It's freezing outside. The city should have a giant thermostat somewhere where when it gets this cold, we just all work together and move it a little to the left or the right adjust it. All right, we'll get that taken care of. St. Valentine's Day and the massacre is a huge deal in the world of the paranormal. For people who don't know the story, let's go through some of the paces of what took place exactly for that St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Yeah, well, this was a blustery cold morning in February of 1929. Mm-hmm. And this was in a little garage on Clark Street, probably the most infamous address in crime history, mm-hmm. 2122 North Clark Street.
That and the Biograph Theater, I guess, would be the other one, right? Those
yes.
would be the big two,
yes.
right?
Yes, right. absolutely. Both Chicago spots in Lincoln
yep.
Park.
Yep.
So this was a hangout of Bugs Moran, you know, who was in charge of the Northside Irish Gang. And he had gone, you know, a lot of people don't realize that he and Capone had really gone neck and neck for this entire generation of Prohibition. You know, it wasn't like Capone was always the big guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were going neck and neck every day for control of this turf and, you know, in the illegal distribution and sale of alcohol in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bugs Moran lived right around the corner from there. And every morning he would show up like clockwork to hang out with his cronies at this little garage, the SMC Cartage Company. And this was a garage where whiskey trucks would be worked on and they would take, you know, deliveries to different speakeasies. And
so by worked on, do you mean like crafted right there or just supplied so they could be sent out? What
yeah.
did they do?
Yeah. yeah, and there were, you know, and they would be worked on. I mean, they would be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, there was famously the mechanic's dog was tied up or chained up in the garage that day. Highball, German Shepherd, who witnessed the whole thing, and he's believed to be one of the actual kind of associated with the hauntings of the location today.
Yeah.
So, you know, Moran would show up there every morning, and that day he was famously late, 7.5 minutes, because he had cut himself shaving.
Yeah.
So when he arrived, he saw that there appeared to be a squad car outside of the building. And so he turned around and he went to the coffee shop on the corner. It's a hot dog stand today.
Yeah.
And waited for this, what he thought was a raid, to pass. You know, very common thing in that day. But what this was four of Capone's men that had been sent in there. Two were dressed as police officers and two in plain clothes with long coats on. And they had been actually staking out the place for weeks from a boarding house across the street. At that time, Lincoln Park was mostly boarding houses, rooming houses.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great neighborhood at that time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who lived in the neighborhood worked for Moran, you know, young single guys. So they had been watching the comings and goings of Moran for weeks, and they had, you know, one job, which was to finally off Moran. And we still to this day really don't know who the gunmen were in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. There's probably 1,000 different versions of, you know, the suspects mm-hmm. and millions, you know, of people that have written or talked about their ideas about it.
But is that one of those things that they say is, it's not solved because they didn't want it to be solved, that maybe the police were a little soft on the investigation, possibly?
There's a lot of that, because, of course, everyone was in bed together at that
time.
I
would imagine.
Unlike now, of course.
No, it doesn't happen today, but back then it was commonplace, sure.
So these four guys come in, and they find that there are 7 of Moran's men inside the place, and they ask, which one is Moran? And, of course, none of them were,
right.
because he hadn't showed up yet. And so what they did was to follow Capone's orders. He said, I don't care who you get Moran.
Yeah.
So they lined the 7 guys up against the rear north wall, famously, of the garage. And the 2 so-called plainclothesmen took Tommy guns out from under their coats. And they sprayed the 7 men 3 times in 3 sweeps, first across their foreheads, back across their chests, and then back across their stomachs. 2 of the guys were still alive after this.
After all that.
These are tough guys.
Yeah.
And they were supposedly finished off with shotgun blasts to their heads. The dog, the German Shepherd, Highball, began barking and howling and crying. Mm-hmm. And he eventually got the woman who owned the boarding house next door, which is still there today, the beautiful building next door, to come over and see what was wrong with the dog. And she found what had happened. And when she called the police and they arrived, they found one of the guys still alive, crawling for the door to try and get out.
Yeah, right.
And eventually he was questioned, who did this? Who shot you? And he said, nobody. I ain't shot. These were hardcore,
yeah, I guess,
non-snitching people, I guess, back then.
Remind me, what was Moran's retaliation after this? Did he do anything to Capone?
It was amazing because Moran really fell into back into like small-time street thug crime. This was not only the worst thing that Chicagoans or Americans had seen. I mean, you know, this was, we're no stranger to death and murder. This is the home of A.J. Tomes, crying out loud, you know. But this was the worst thing that anyone had ever seen in the United States that was done for business.
Yeah.
And it was the
last. It got national attention. Everybody in the country was aware of this.
People had had enough, you know, probably hundreds of young men had been killed, like the drug wars today.
Right, right.
People were fed up and sick of it. So this was not only the beginning of the end of Prohibition, but it was also the beginning. I mean, it was the beginning of Al Capone, the way we know him today,
right,
as the most infamous gangster of all time. This was when he came into that role.
Right.
Only on this day. But it was also short-lived because he was, you know, a marked man after that. And everyone had just had enough.
Is it true, from everything I've read and what I've seen in television shows and movies, that despite the fact that these guys were cold-blooded killers, there was still some sort of an affection for guys like Al Capone and Bugs Moran, that for some reason the public, despite what they had the possibility of doing to people, just shredding them, there was still some sort of a love between the general public and these gangsters?
Well, there were all of these relationships that they had forged with so many people.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, they were giving people what they couldn't get anywhere else that they desperately wanted. They wanted alcohol, and these were the people that were providing it.
Yeah.
But they also had these very benevolent relationships with so many local business owners and such. And, you know, and like Al Capone was known as this great guy to so many people. And I hear stories all the time just from people on the tours and such that say my grandfather drove for Al Capone, or he was a waiter for Al Capone or one of his valets, and he was the nicest guy and he was so generous. So people have these very conflicting memories today. Even.
Isn't that something? Ursula Bielski is here, founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc. The website you want to visit is chicagohauntings.com. We'll tell you how you can get a tour and how the paranormal side of this all comes into effect next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. It's Bill F. on WGN. It's Bill F. Wendy has the rest of the day off because it's her birthday. Ursula Bielski is here, founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc. You can learn more at chicagohauntings.com. You know this stuff inside out. When something bad happens, Ursula, like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, in your opinion, what happens to that space, to that building, to the aura of where something horrible has happened?
It's interesting. There's so many theories about what happens to create hauntings or ghosts. And there's as many theories as there are paranormal investigators, I guess. But one of the main ones is that there is kind of an emotional imprint that's left behind. And we call this a residual haunting. And so this is something that people visiting the area may be able to pick up on for generations to come, even hundreds of years, depending on how severe the event was and how sensitive the people are that are visiting. So we see all kinds of things ranging from replays of these kind of events where you're actually kind of watching a video.
I was just going to say, with a replay, I'm sure you're aware of the show Dark Shadows from the soap opera from the 1960s. I remember there was a room that I can't remember what they called it on Dark Shadows, but when a certain girl would go into the room, she would see horrible things that had happened in that room from years before. So it's the same concept, huh?
It is. And, you know, one of the most important things about the history of these locations is the actual physical environment. One of the most famous stories about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is that the bricks of the actual building that became souvenirs for people have this energy attached to them. Some people say they're cursed, but other people say that they have this energy attached to them. I actually have one of them on my mantle at home. But these, we call this the stone tape theory. This is a theory that takes its name from this mini series that was released in Britain in the 1970s. And it was about this group of paranormal investigators that was doing an investigation in this old location. And they came to discover that the events of the past had actually sort of imprinted themselves on the bricks and the stones of the building. And so the stone tape theory is something that a lot of investigators talk about today, believing that the actual buildings and the stones, the actual materials, become sort of like a conduit.
They absorb it somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And you can, it's like watching a videotape or listening to an audio file when you hear things or see things. And so that's one of the big theories. Of course, there's also the traditional ghosty theories that people died so suddenly that they weren't expecting it. And so they don't know that they're dead. So they're still there. In Chicago, one of the big things that we always talk about is the fact that these locations where these enormous tragedies happened do not, for the most part, have any evidence of commemoration at them. The site where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre happened, vacant lot now, it's a little parking lot next to a City of Chicago senior residence. And this is deliberate. Richard J. Daley, our former mayor, have the city buy that property so that no one would ever be able to make a tourist attraction there.
It's a black mark to some extent, and it glorifies the days of organized crime.
Yeah, he went through the city during his tenure and he tore down every building that had anything to do with Capone, including the Lexington Hotel, beautiful Lexington Hotel at Surmac in Michigan, where he had his offices. Tore down, you know, the Four Deuces, where he had his first job when he came to Chicago from New York. This, of course, the site of St. Valentine's Day Massacre was number one on the list. We'll get rid of it. People will forget that this stuff happened and will not hear about it or talk about it anymore. But ghost hunters know as soon as you do that, it's the easiest recipe to get ghosts to come around is to not talk about what happened to them.
There's similarities. You and I have spoken about the area where the Eastland disaster took place and then where they kept the bodies afterwards. Is it the same kind of a feel of kind of unresolved ghosts still inhabiting that area, trying to find answers for themselves? Do you chalk it up to that?
It is. There are still, you know, people that live in the old rooming house where the woman owned that discovered the massacre at first. That's high-end condos now.
Yeah.
And people in those buildings and also some of the seniors in the high-rise often come out during our tours and tell us about the things that they experienced there. And these range from seeing figures kind of wandering around the area. They talk about as figures in suits and hats that look like they've lost something. They're
could it be drunk Cub fans? Do you think it could be? It could be, right?
It could be. I don't think they'd be that well dressed.
No, maybe not. All right.
But
I don't know. By the playoffs, people were starting to dress up
a little bit.
So
that's
maybe
true. We had to.
In October.
Had to have money to get those tickets.
Do they have to disclose? I know when you're selling a property where something horrible has happened, you have to disclose that. Now, with something like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre that was so many years ago, if you were trying to get a room in that, would you have to say, oh, by the way, right over there, that's where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre
was? If it did not
was?
Happen actually in your property, no.
Then you don't.
Yeah, I did a whole segment of this for a local news show a few years ago, and we had gone to the Speck apartments where Richard Speck had killed the
nurses. Oh, that's eerie.
We had gone to the John Wayne Gacy home site. We had gone into the actual apartment where Herons had killed his first victim on Pine Grove Avenue, where he had written on the wall with lipstick. And, you know, there was a big court case in New York some years ago that was the first time this was brought into court where you have to disclose some, you know, that it's a blighted property.
Is that how they term it? Blighted property? Yeah.
The most recent, in Chicago, the most recent instance of that is the Hudson House in Englewood, yeah. where Jennifer Hudson's family was yeah. killed. So, yeah, you do have to do it now. And that's funny, in New Orleans now, though, a lot of the realtors will put haunted or not haunted on the placards outside of the properties that are for sale, because a lot of people like that.
They want to buy a haunted house.
Right.
Wow. All right. So when somebody takes this particular tour, the St. Valentine's Day tour, what exactly do you show them? What do they get to see?
Yeah, well, we have two tours, and they're both tomorrow, Saturday, the 13th, and one of them is our 3 o'clock afternoon tour. This is the Gothic Chicago tour, and it is our special Guns N' Roses version of our kind of dark history tour on yeah. Saturday afternoons, and it departs from the Congress Plaza Hotel, okay. very storied old place where Al Capone used to play cards
yeah.
every Friday night, and very famously, there were phone calls back and forth between rooms at the Congress Plaza Hotel on the night of the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
To check the progress of what was happening? What do you think?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
I don't know anything.
Were there texts? Did anyone check for texts? He was an innovator.
Maybe.
People don't know that about him. All right, so you get to see the it starts at the Congress.
Right, it starts at the Congress. And both of the tours on Saturday, the 3 o'clock Gothic Chicago tour and our Shots in the Dark pub crawl at mm-hmm. 6 o'clock, also mm-hmm. from the Congress. These are both tours that go to sites of, you know, Chicago's Valentine's Day passion, Valentine's Day Chicago style. So these are not only sites like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, Holy Name Cathedral, which still has bullet holes in the cornerstone from yeah. shootouts, but also sites where love has gone very, very bad yeah. in Chicago history. You know, we talk about Resurrection Mary, Chicago's, you know, ill-fated dance partner who
right.
cannot find rest after all of these years. We talk about the woman in red who jumped off the roof of the Drake Hotel on opening night in 1920 because she found her fiancé in the arms of someone else at the big New Year's Eve party. So these are all Valentine's story, Chicago style.
This is
love
great.
And crime gone bad.
This is great. All right. If people want more information, Ursula, or to book one of the tours, they want to go to ChicagoHauntings.com. That's the best
move.
Yeah,
you can find the links to the Gothic Chicago tours. That's the 3 p.m. tour tomorrow, and also to our 6 p.m. pub crawl, both from the Congress Hotel.
Tickets are going fast, so if you want in on this, do it now. Again, that's ChicagoHauntings.com. There's a 3 p.m. tour. There's a 6 p.m. tour. You're in charge of both.
Yeah, and both are BYOB, and okay. we will have moonshine.
There will be moonshine. That's what I was going to ask.
Yes,
will there be
complimentary
moonshine?
Shots of moonshine.
That's what people
love.
Everyone loves moonshine. Ursula, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great time on the tours. We really appreciate you being here.